Good morning, everyone. It's good to be with you. We want to, again, welcome all of those who are visiting with us. We do have several who are here. Good to see Eric Wetzel with us and little Logan. And I understand Aaron's going to be coming in town here in a day or two. But good to have everyone with us. Always good when we can gather together at the first of the week and edify one another as we praise God. And that, as even Justin alluded to in his table talk, that really sets us up for the rest of this week and helps us get through the week. I'd like to direct your attention this morning, if I may, to this passage of Scripture in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. The Apostle Paul is talking to the Corinthians about their future hope and that ultimate resurrection hope that we have through Jesus Christ. He says in chapter 5 and verse 6, "Being always of good courage, and knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord, for we walk by faith and not by sight, we are of good courage, I say, and prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be at home with the Lord." Paul makes a contrast here in these verses. A contrast between faith and sight, a contrast between what we understand by faith and what we know by sight. And I want to talk with you this morning, if I may, about this concept, this distinction between faith and knowledge. What we understand by faith and what we understand by knowledge. And when we use these terms, faith and knowledge, especially when we oppose them one to another, we're usually talking about this in this way. We're talking about those things that we know from our personal experience as opposed to those things that we accept by faith. Not because we understand them from personal experience, but because of the testimony of somebody else who has experienced that. Or the evidence of some other kind that we are relying upon. And that's why we have faith. That's why we believe something to be the case. This is that basic distinction between knowledge and faith. What we understand by faith, what we understand as a result of knowledge. Probably if I asked everyone in this auditorium this morning, do you believe that fire is hot? I think y'all would say, well, yeah, we believe that. If I said, do you believe it or do you know that it's hot? I think you would say, well, I know fire is hot. Because most of you have experienced it personally. You've gotten close to it. You've felt its heat. Some of you may have gotten too close to it and had it burn you. You know from personal experience that fire is hot. You don't merely believe it because somebody else has experienced the heat and they told you about it. No, you know that as a fact from personal experience. If there was an arsonist here in this area and the police were coming to investigate and some home had been set on fire, you might have the police interviewing a particular individual, and that person might say, well, Tom started the fire, and the police investigator might say, well, why do you believe that? And he would say, I don't just believe it, I know Tom started the fire. I saw him do it. But then maybe somebody else who heard that report, that testimony, might say, well, Tom started the fire. Do you know that he started the fire? Well, I don't know he started the fire, but I believe that he did because Bill told me that he did, and Bill said he saw him do it. You see the distinction between faith and knowledge? Knowledge is that which we understand because of personal experience. Faith or belief is what we understand because of the testimony of somebody else who has said that they have experienced that. Or it may be some other kind of evidence that is testifying to us, so to speak, that something is the case. This is a basic concept that I think it's important for us to understand. Now, sometimes when we use these terms, we don't always use these terms that precisely. Sometimes we might use the term faith and knowledge in a little bit of an overlapping way. But I think everyone can understand the basic point that we're trying to make. And this is a point that Paul was getting at in that passage in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. This whole concept of the difference between what you know by personal experience and what you believe as a result of the testimony of others, that's what our court system is based on. I mean, you're there and you're maybe called for jury duty, as I know several of you have been called. And so here's a case that you're having to adjudicate. And the 7-Eleven store was allegedly robbed and you weren't there. You don't know from your own personal experience who did it. But then here are these witnesses who get on the witness stand and they one by one start saying, well, he's the one that robbed that 7-Eleven store. I was there. I saw him do it. And it may very well be that then as a result of that testimony, you and the rest of the members of the jury, you counsel together and you come up with what you believe to be the facts here. You don't know it, but you believe it based upon the testimony that seems to be reliable and credible and beyond a reasonable doubt. You believe this to be the case, that he's the individual. And it's all based upon testimony. Our court system every day functions with this concept. If we can understand that, then we can appreciate what Paul's getting at when he talks about how we as Christians, we walk by faith and not by sight. In the context, Paul is talking about this reward, this promise of the afterlife that Jesus has made to us. The idea of the resurrection from the dead and this reward in that ultimate kingdom, that new heavens and new earth, that heavenly reward that God has promised us. We've not experienced it yet. We haven't seen it. We haven't perceived it personally with our own senses. But we walk by faith because of the testimony of Jesus. And Jesus has said, this is the reward. This is what is there. I've come down from heaven and I'm now testifying to you about the truth, Jesus said in John chapter 18 when he stood before Pilate. He said, for this I have been born, that I might testify concerning the truth, so that all of us then might be in a position where we would believe that and then act accordingly. Live on the basis of that faith. To walk by faith, as Paul says. Not by sight, because we've not yet experienced what Jesus has told us about, but we're believing in him, and therefore we're walking by faith. This is what the Hebrew writer is getting at in Hebrews chapter 11, that great chapter of faith. When he says, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it the men of old gained approval. He's talking here in this chapter about a whole host of individuals throughout Old Testament history who had to walk by faith and not by sight. He talks about these individuals who hoped for those things that God had promised them. And they were convicted of those things that they had not yet seen. They had not observed these things. And he gives several examples here in Hebrews chapter 11. For instance, he talks in verse 7 about Noah being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household. And so here is a man who had certainly never experienced some kind of worldwide flood, and yet God is calling upon him to build this ark, this great big chest, and it took him 120 years to do that. And then God says, now you get inside all of that with these animals, and I'm going to protect you. And so here's a man who had to live by faith. He hadn't seen all of those things that God said were going to come, but he believed in God. He believed in God's testimony about those things. You keep going, you read about the faith of Abraham, for instance, in verse 8, by faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise. Here God calls upon Abraham to go into this land. He said, I will provide you sustenance there. You will thrive there. Abraham had never experienced that land before. didn't know where he was going, just going to go where God told him to go. He was walking by faith and not by sight. He was relying upon the testimony of God. You keep going and he talks about the faith of Sarah and the faith of Abraham in regard to Isaac, and ultimately even talks about how God calls upon Abraham to take his son Isaac, that promised child, and then slay him on Mount Moriah. And Abraham does that. And the Hebrew writer says it was because he walked by faith. He says in verse 17, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise men even from the dead. Abraham had never seen anybody resurrected before. But that's what he assumed God must be intending to do. Because Abraham had every intention of obeying God's command and taking that knife and slaying his son. Because that's what God told him to do. As horrendous as that was, he was going to walk by faith and trust in God that everything would turn out fine. And even though he knew that this was the promised child, and that if God's promise was not carried forth through that child, then God would be a liar. Even though he knew all of that, he thought in his mind, well, I guess God's going to raise him from the dead. He was walking by faith, not by sight. He didn't know that God would raise him from the dead. Didn't know that God could raise people from the dead. He'd never seen God do anything like that. But he put his faith in God and God's promises and had conviction about those things not yet seen. And the Hebrew writer says, it's by that kind of faith that the men of old gained approval. Now, folks, that's what the Bible is calling upon all of us to be doing, to be walking by faith. I want to say this to you. Everybody lives by faith, whether they admit it or not. Everybody lives by faith, whether they admit it or not. Every now and then, I'll have somebody say to me, especially if he kind of views this whole religion thing as absurd, you religious people talk about faith all the time. I don't believe in going by faith. I only live my life by what I know. A lot of times people talk about this scientific world in which we live. And so I believe in facts, and I believe in what I know. And I don't live my life by faith the way you religious people do. And usually that's kind of said with a certain amount of sneering and a certain kind of disdain for those of us who would live our life by faith, as if that person himself doesn't have to walk by faith in some way. Do you realize that everybody lives by faith, whether they admit it or not? Somebody says a movie recommendation to you. Ever ask somebody, have you seen that film? We were thinking about that. Yeah. Oh, I've seen it. It's really good. And so you go, oh, really? Okay. Well, then we'll go see that. Because you have faith in that person's opinion about that movie. And so you say, okay, I'm going to go see that. Might be some people that they say, oh, it's a great movie, like my kids. My son's telling, oh, it's a great action film. And that's what causes Amy and I to just write that off our list. Because we don't have a lot of faith in their judgment about what we would regard as a good movie. We walk by faith in regard to all sorts of things in our everyday life. Car mechanics. I'm absolutely helpless when my car breaks down. Okay? Nobody ever calls me when they have a car question. They may call Eric Netting, but they don't call me. I'm absolutely dependent upon that mechanic who tells me, well, this thingamajig has gone bad, and the thingamabob over there, and this, and all that, and blah, 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 you know. And I sit there, and I just nod like I know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm, yes, uh-huh. And I'm fine just waiting. What's the bottom line? What do I got to do? And I put my faith in that mechanic. I put my trust in that mechanic. There's been a few mechanics over the years. After all of that, I think maybe they were trying to rip me off. and I don't go to them anymore. Guess what? I go to another mechanic who I trust. And that's the way all of us have to do. Teachers, here we go to school every day. Maybe we're going to elementary school or high school, or we're in college. Here's a professor. And so he tells us all this information. And here's what happened back in history. And students are taking notes, or they're listening to all that, you know. And am I going to be tested on all this, you know? But they imbibe of what the teacher says, and they accept what the teacher says. Why? They weren't there. They don't know what happened back in history. They don't know all of this information. But the teacher in whom they put their faith, the teacher said, okay, this is what has happened. And so they rely on what the teacher says. That's what we all have to do. Even our knowledge of history itself. Where are the teachers getting their information? The fact of the matter is, none of us were back there in the days of Julius Caesar when he allegedly crossed the Rubicon. What are we having to rely upon? We're having to rely upon those ancient sources, and there were witnesses claiming to be eyewitnesses who were there and involved in all that. And so that's what the report is. And so we're relying upon those sources, and we accept those sources. Do we know from personal experience that those things are true? No, sometimes we say that, oh, I know that Caesar crossed the Rubicon. It's really a matter of faith that we're believing these sources, these people who say that that's what happened. And they were there. They alleged that they were there. And we're putting our faith in them. That's what happens to us every night when you watch the news or you read a newspaper. You know, news report about, you know, murder being committed on Dale Mabry, you know, last night. Well, were you there? No, but the reporter is reporting that, and you accept that as a trustworthy source. And in fact, if it finally reaches a point where you think that maybe the news agency is somehow slanting the news, and you're not quite certain that you're getting the proper slant, they're giving you some kind of spin on that, what do? Well, you change the channel and go to some news a channel that you think is going to give you more reliable information. Everybody walks by faith. Everybody lives by faith and not by sight. It's just part of being a finite human being. You can't get away from it. All of these things I've talked with you about are kind of ordinary and mundane aspects of life, even really important things in our lives. We walk by faith. Babysitters for our kids. Daycare centers, drop your kid off. Or here, husband and wife going out for a night on the town and leave the kids there in the hands of a babysitter. Well, you put your faith in that babysitter. You put your faith in that daycare center and what they tell you that they're going to. In fact, when you come home and you say, well, what happened? The babysitter says, well, little Johnny was just, you know, lovely and wonderful. And, you know, well, you believe that because you weren't there. You don't know it, but you believe it because of the testimony of the babysitter whom you trust. And sometimes you may tell little Johnny was a devil. And if you trust your babysitter, you're going to believe what she says about the baby, about little Johnny. I mean, that's just the way it is. How about even our own physical health? Do you realize you walk by faith in your doctor? Not by sight. When he tells you that you have this illness or you've got this problem, I mean, you know, they'll show you the x-ray sometimes, you know, or here's the, you know, and it's just like you with the car mechanic or me, you know, where you nod your head, yeah, right, okay, yeah. And you're thinking in your head, I wish Pat Gill were here so I could explain these terms to me. But you rely upon that physician and what he tells you. Sometimes you might get a second opinion because, well, you just want to have another testimony here. But you're still relying upon the testimony of somebody else, and he's able to look at that test from his personal knowledge of having examined you. He says, I know this is your problem, and so you rely upon his testimony. very important things in our lives. We walk by faith. How about even this? How about even walking by faith in what your mother has said to you about who your father is? Do you know who your father is? We say sometimes that we do. Oh, I know. So-and-so is my father. Okay, but how do you know that? Really, we all know who our father is. We say we know who our father is. Really, we only believe what our mom has said. And in fact, that's the whole concept about a wife and her fidelity to her husband, and it's the confidence you have in the wife and in her faithfulness to her husband and her marital vows that causes you to believe then that the child that she gives birth to, that it was fathered by the man she says is the father. Even in the most fundamental aspect of our lives, we walk by faith, not by sight. And then somebody says, well, I don't believe in going by faith. I just go with what I know. And we just show how foolish we really are. Everybody lives by faith. Now, I've said all that to say this. Jesus is asking us to put our faith in Him. Jesus is saying, believe in me. In John 3:16, in that discourse of Jesus with Nicodemus, He said to Nicodemus, God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, talking about Himself, that whoever would believe in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. And that's what Jesus was calling upon us to do, is believe in Him. Trust in Him. In John 4, verse 21, two words that Jesus says to the Samaritan woman at the well that I think are really powerful words. He says to her, believe me. He addressed her, woman, and He said, believe me. And then He told her some things. And that's what Jesus is really saying to all of us. We all have to walk by faith. We all have to put our faith and our confidence in somebody every day of our lives. What Jesus is saying, okay, I'm here to tell you about the most important things of life. I want you to believe in me. And so Jesus says, I want you to believe me when I tell you that this path that you're on that ignores God and does these sinful things, that's not going to be a good path for you. Jesus says, believe me, trust me. Jesus says, I want to tell you that ultimately there's going to be a judgment day. And you're going to stand before God on judgment day. Every one of us will stand before Him on judgment day. Jesus says, I want you to believe me. You're not going to be able to stand on judgment day before God and escape His judgment unless you follow my path. Unless you become my disciple. Unless you do it my way. Jesus says, I'm here to help you, but you've got to believe in me. You've got to trust me. Just like that doctor when he says to you, you've got this illness. Now here's the treatment. You've got to trust me. Jesus is saying, you've got this kind of spiritual illness. And it's of a far greater consequence than any kind of physical malady. And Jesus says, believe me. Trust me. And that's really what the Bible is all about. That's what the Bible's talking about. That's what Jesus is talking about. Now, I want to say something else about all of this. I think for us to appreciate fully this whole idea of the distinction between walking by faith and not by sight, the distinction between knowledge and faith, we need to also understand this. The Bible is not talking about wishful thinking when it comes to serving Jesus or accepting what Jesus says. It's not wishful thinking. You know what wishful thinking is? Just like knowledge is an understanding based upon personal experience, faith is understanding based upon the testimony of others who have experienced it. Wishful thinking is based upon either one. Wishful thinking is just, well, I just want this to be true. And so you just sort of go with that. There's no evidence, there's no testimony from somebody that can really verify that, but sometimes people just kind of want something to be true. And they wish that it's true. And sometimes people make the mistake of thinking that biblical faith is just the same thing as wishful thinking. And they equate the idea of faith and wishful thinking. Well, you Christians, you just kind of want this to be true. You're just kind of vain hope that it's true. There's no real evidence. There's no real reason to put your faith in Jesus. You just want it to be true. And so you accept that. I want us to understand that is not at all what the Bible is talking about. In fact, Jesus is recorded to have said this in John chapter 5 and verse 31. If I alone bear witness of myself, my testimony is not true. The works which the Father has given me to accomplish, the very works that I do, bear witness of me that the Father has sent me. I think what Jesus is getting at here is that anybody could come on the scene and claim, I'm from God, believe in me. But the mere fact that a person just claims that, the mere fact that Jesus said he had come down from heaven, that didn't make it worthy of being accepted as true. That didn't make it worthy of being believed as true. Jesus said, okay, here's the evidence. Here's why you can put your faith in me. Because of these miraculous works that the Father has given me to do. And Jesus said that those works are the reason why you can have confidence in what I'm saying to you. In fact, this is so emphasized in John chapter 10 and verse 37, where Jesus is saying, this isn't just some wishful thinking. He's not just wanting a bunch of gullible people who will just swallow this without any evidence. No, Jesus says, if I do not do the works of my Father, do not believe me. But if I do them, though you do not believe me, believe the works, that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I in the Father. Again, Jesus and the Bible, it's not like, you know, some old-time snake oil salesman who's coming in and saying, okay, you know, here's some magic elixir, and so just accept that. Or maybe a better illustration, a modern-day illustration would be, it's not like you get an email from somebody who says, hello, I'm from South Africa, and I've got $6 million I'm trying to transfer into this country, and I want you to have half of it. Send me your email. And there are a lot of gullible people who, and they click on all that. That's not what the Bible's talking about. Jesus wasn't talking about people following him out of sheer gullibility. He wasn't talking about credulous people who just accept something with no evidence and no testimony and no reason to believe it. No, he was talking about firm, solid reason to believe in him, to be able to put your trust in him and have confidence in him as someone who knew what he was talking about, who could be trusted. And that's what the Bible is talking about when it talks about us walking by faith. Not walking by wishful thinking, but walking by faith, which is based upon testimony and evidence. That's why John 20 says in verse 30, many other signs, therefore, that is miraculous signs, Jesus also performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these have been written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. That's what the Bible's talking about when it talks about us walking by faith. Let me tell you a common misconception. It's illustrated in this book, The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel. It's a book I've recommended to a lot of people, and it is a good book, except for this one little section. The author, Craig Blomberg, says this, "You know, it's ironic. The Bible considers it praiseworthy to have a faith that does not require evidence." Remember how Jesus replied to doubting Thomas? "You believe because you see. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe." We looked at this passage our last service here in the auditorium. Okay, this is such a common misconception that people have. That what Jesus meant when he said to Thomas, "Blessed are those who believe without having seen," that somehow he was saying, "Blessed are those who accepted me without any evidence whatsoever." That's not what he was talking about. No, he was talking about the distinction between knowledge and faith that we've been going over. He was saying, okay, there are some people who have believed in the testimony of those who witnessed me alive again from the dead, the reports of those witnesses. And they believed those reports. Thomas refused to do that. He said, "No, I've got to, with my own personal experience, I've got to see this resurrected Jesus. With my own hands, I've got to touch his wounds. My own eyes see him alive again from the dead." The testimony of Peter and Andrew and John wasn't sufficient. He didn't want to walk by faith. He wanted to know firsthand. And Jesus said to him, okay, "Blessed are those who believe the reports of those, but who didn't see personally." That's what Jesus meant. And yet we got a lot of people in our day who think that somehow the faith the Bible's talking about is a faith that doesn't require any kind of evidence at all. I had a lady one time talk to me about, "Marty, can you talk to this young man? He has a lot of questions about the Bible and whether it's the inspired word of God." And I have never had those questions. I'm so glad that I've always just accepted the Bible by faith, but he wants some kind of evidence. So, maybe you could kind of help him. Almost like, "Oh, the poor, pitiful young man." You see, we misunderstand this. Walking by faith and not by sight is not saying we walk without any evidence, without any reason to believe in Jesus. Oh, no. There's absolute evidence. There's absolute reason to believe in Jesus. It's not things that we have seen with our own eyes, with our senses. It's not that kind of empirical knowledge, but it's absolutely credible testimony from credible witnesses and credible evidence. And so that's what we need to understand about what biblical faith is and what the Bible is talking about. No, it's not firsthand experiential knowledge, no. But neither is it just wishful thinking and gullibility. But it's looking at Jesus and saying, okay, there's evidence for his claim to be from heaven. There's evidence for his miracles that supported his claim to be the Son of God, that he was resurrected from the dead. And because of that testimony and its credibility, I'm going to put my faith in Jesus. We all got to walk by faith in something and in somebody all throughout our life. Jesus says, okay, I'm here. The most important things of your life, walk by faith in me. Believe in me. And I'll tell you what, the stronger the evidence, the stronger our faith. The stronger the evidence, the stronger our faith will be. Which, by the way, is a reason why so often in lessons I present here, yeah, I talk about that evidence. I talk about the historical corroboration of the testimony of the biblical books and archaeology and this and that. Why do I do that? Because I want people to see this is not just some wishful thinking on our part. Being a Christian doesn't mean that you check your brain at the door and just believe it because, oh, I just want it to be true. No, there's credible evidence and credible testimony. And that's what biblical faith is all about. So how about you in your life? Do you believe in Jesus? Have you been willing to put your faith in him? Have you looked at the evidence? Is he credible? Is he believable? You've got to decide for yourself. If you're not going to walk by faith in Jesus, well, you're going to walk by faith in somebody or something else. Jesus says, look at the evidence for me and my reliability. And I think if you will do that, you will indeed find that Jesus is absolutely worthy of your faith. Is there someone this morning who needs to put their faith in Jesus and become his disciple? We sure would like to help you do that. Won't you come together, we stand and sing this song of encouragement.